Welcome to Quilla Pod, the new podcast for Quilla. I'm Cynthia Morales-Ladapo, Director of Digital Community for Quilla. And in my role, we are building a community of families, people with IEDD, and professionals across the country. My co-host is John Dickerson, CEO and founder of Quilla. In this week's episode, we are talking about community gathering and its impact. Stay tuned. Hi, John.
Hey, Cynthia. How are you today?
Good, John. You know, it's November. Can you believe it?
It is flying by. It is amazing how fast time goes, isn't it?
Yeah, it just feels like yesterday we had our episode about setting goals for the new year, and now here we are again.
That's right.
John, you know, we're heading into Thanksgiving, we're heading into the holidays, and that's always when people gather together as a community, whether it be with friends at work, people have Friendsgiving, or with their loved ones. And I thought it would be a great time to have an episode on community gathering.
Well, and it's such an important part of everybody's life. And for many people with disabilities, there isn't a lot of community gathering, that their community is measured by the people that are paid to be around them.
Yeah. And, you know, the more research comes out, the more we read, community is an important and powerful part of people's life, right? Because it plays such a vital role in an environment, in making sure people feel safe, in our building trust and confidence.
Well, and the point about feeling safe is so true, you know, that where is the group of people that you feel safe with in these challenging times?
Yeah.
And you feel comfortable with, that you look forward to being around. And that is based on those relationships you have.
Yeah.
You know, I remember a story of a young man that had very significant physical disabilities, and he moved into a home in Bloomington, Indiana. And he happened to be Greek Orthodox. Well, came from Indianapolis, moved down there, and his faith was very important to him. And his mother had died, so there was no family there anymore. And this was the only place there was an opening for him that was accessible and he could move into. Turns out there's a Greek Orthodox church in Bloomington. And when one of the staff volunteered to reach out to them, and one of the fellows said, well, we'll come pick him up every Sunday.
That's so nice.
You have to understand, he uses a power wheelchair. Well, we'll have to figure that out, you know, and they did. And it was that relationship that built the sense of his community and people that wanted him there. They, you know, they followed all the steps that Eric Carter talks about, from inviting, welcoming, acknowledging, connecting with folks. And fast forward 6 years down the road, this young man actually moved in with one of the men that was a part of that church. And they still are living together for this day. And so, not saying that happens to everybody, but if they hadn't found that first step of building community,
he wouldn't
have found those folks.
Yeah, and I think, you know, that has to be prioritized in everyone's lives, and especially when you are part of someone's support system too, right? How do you help that individual, that person, build community, or you part of that person's community? How do you make them feel connected? Because that part, people are much happier when they are connected to others, whether that is in physically connected, you're gathering in the same space, or a virtual community. You know, it helps individuals, according to research, it helps them feel less stress, less anxiety. It also helps folks who are depressed. And, you know, the other part about being a part of a community is that it exposes individuals to a variety of people. And I think that part is so important as well in the IDD community, to have people of all of all abilities, be part of your circle of friends, whether it's circle of friends, your coworkers, your church community, because it helps everyone, whether it is to learn, to be a better friend, think about accessibility different.
Well, and I think it's so true because it is, again, it's not only what you as an individual, person with a disability or a family member build from that community, it's what you give back. What is the support you give to one another along the way? And that's where the bonds come from, that it's not a one-way street. It's not just what are you going to receive, it's what do you give back? And how do you feel part of that group? I remembered I was invited once to come to a Saturday morning coffee shop that a group of individuals who identified on the autism spectrum had a Saturday morning coffee group. And they invited me to come and listen in, not to speak, but just to listen in. And it was their time to talk about the things in their life that were important to them. And I think it was after about the third time they invited me to join in. And I said, well, I'm not sure. I'm learning more than I'm going to teach anybody here. But they were so intent on talking about what was important to them that it was key to them. If they were going to invite anybody, they wanted to say, you're going to listen in as opposed to tell us what to do. So again, that's a big part of community too. Do you feel that you're an equal participant as opposed to somebody there that is allowed to come? Does that make any sense?
Yeah, no, I think it does, John, because you know, you're at that moment, the priority was to build relationship with those folks, right? And you in to build relationship, you have to listen and you have to learn, right? About how you said what they were experiencing in their lives. And that is, I think their model is a great model, right? More meetings should be like that. More groups should be like that when we all get invited to, you know, listen the first couple of times and then be able to chime in and join.
Well, this gets to, a friend of mine wrote a book. It was called Creating Blue Space. And, you know, when we think about community, it's not always the community we would have in mind for folks. And so they had a guy that was a big guy. He was on the spectrum and he was fairly rough and rowdy. And in this book, Creating Blue Space, the title comes from, in the middle of a hurricane, if you get right in the eye of the hurricane, it's calm. And if you look straight up in the eye of the hurricane, it could be a quarter mile across, maybe smaller, maybe larger. But if you look straight up, you see blue sky. Where if you look straight ahead, you see chaos and wind and rain and stuff, craziness. So anyway, as they were talking about this guy, and he'd been kicked out of a group home, he'd been kicked out of a waiver program, he was more likely to hit people than anything. And they finally sat down with him and said, you know, what is it that you really love in life? And he said, motorcycles. And they said, okay, well, there's this part of town, this is upstate New York, there's this part of town where all these motorcycle clubs have places and shops, and there's, maybe we can get a job for you over there and hang with these people and see what they do. Well, this was, as you can imagine, the motorcycle clubs aren't in the best part of town, right?
Yeah.
So they were looking for a staff person that was willing to go with them over to the motorcycle side of town. And it was this couple block area and streets where there was clubhouses and motorcycle shops and garages. And anyway, so they're walking down and they're kind of finding their way, see if they could talk to somebody. And all of a sudden, some big burly biker guy comes out and punches this guy in the chest and said, "Who do you guys think you are coming down here?" Well, this young man who happens to be on the spectrum picked him up and threw him through the window of this little motorcycle shop.
Oh my gosh.
Now, the staff person who's telling the story said, "I just thought I was dead." And suddenly the guy picks himself off and comes over to him and says, "You look like you're one of us," and slapped him on the back. And what started out was a whole new relationship. And he ended up finding a place to live near there, found a job, but it was a community of his choice, not one that somebody would have picked for them. Another story, a guy named Carl out of Johnson City, Tennessee, had failed in a lot of settings in what he really wanted to do. And Carl, if people Google Carl and Core Services on YouTube, you'll find that he's got a video that thousands of people have watched. And Carl wanted to live alone and he wanted to live in a trailer house. And people said, "Well, you don't want to live in a trailer house. We can get you a nice apartment." He wanted to live in a trailer house because his mother lived in a trailer house. His family had lived in a trailer house. So they got him a trailer house, built some technology into there. Instead of him being frustrated where he lived before, he was very successful. They had a Ring doorbell, and they noticed that every Sunday, this guy's dressed like a Blues Brother is coming to his door to pick him up. And they didn't know who he was. He's got a black hat, black suit, skinny black tie. And so they asked Carl, "Who's this guy that comes every Sunday?" Carl said, "What do you want to know for?" And it turns out it was one of his neighbors invited Carl to go to church with him. And he drives him to church every Sunday. And so you've got to create space for people to find community that they relate to, not the community that you want them to be part of. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense.
Because I think sometimes with our own staff and families, one of the things we're all struggling with is finding that community. Where is, in this world coming out of the pandemic, where we're much more likely to stay home than go places, where is that community we want to be part of? Where is the places that we need to be part of to make us whole? I think those are all the challenges. And, you know, as we think about it, how do we help people find those avenues? And, you know, another kind of odd little story. We had a guy one time that liked starting fires. Now, if you're living in a group home or a waiver apartment, and he never started big fires, but he'd start fires in the trash can. And,
gosh,
you know, that he liked kind of watching the fires, and they couldn't figure out how to get him to stop. And then somebody suggested, "We should go visit a firehouse. We should let him meet firemen and talk to him about why he likes starting fires." So they took him down, and he immediately took a liking to some of the firehouse guys. And what led to a conversation, and they started talking about how putting fires out is what they do. And they invited him and said, "You want to hang out here with us a little bit and get acquainted?" And he now hangs out 3 or 4 days a week with the firehouse, helps out by cleaning up, helps cleaning in the kitchen. And, you know, he doesn't start fires in trash cans anymore. But he found value with people that valued him being around. And if he doesn't show up on his Monday, Wednesday, Thursday, they're checking to see what's wrong with him. Is everything okay?
And it took someone to help him discover, you know, that interest and say, "Let's go to the firehouse." Most people would just be, "Don't do that. That's wrong. You're putting people in danger," and leave it at that.
Absolutely. You know, John McKnight talks about there's two kinds of people that are really important. One are guides. They can guide you through the community to find that space that you're looking for. And then the second are doors. There are people that can either close the door for you or open it for you. And so in each of those stories, whether it was the church, the motorcycle gang, or the firemen, there was a guide, somebody that got them to the place they're interested in. But there was also a door. There was somebody that opened that door, welcomed them in, brought them into that point of being. And so as people think about that, we've got to look for those folks that are the guides that can help you get there, and the doors that will open for you to let you get in, because both are important. And many times there are different people along the way. You know, I think back to your work when you were working on vaccinations, and you went to where the people were at, and you went to the churches, and you went to the soccer fields, and you went to places that people could help and provide that research and support. That became very real, and you were being a guide and then a door at the people that could actually provide the vaccines and the people in the churches that would open the door for you and welcome you in and establish that trust for folks. And, you know, John McKnight's been around for many, many years, and his work is still as valid today. Is you're going into a community, you need those guides that are trusted there, and that's how you'll get the doors open for you as well.
Thank you, John. Yeah, I think that's true. And to all of our listeners tuning in and listening to this week's episode, we ask you to identify the guides in your community and the door. And if you can identify them, John, what do you suggest that they do?
Well, we share with our good friend Diamon of where you just walk the neighborhood and get to know people. You know, one of the lost arts of today is knowing your neighbors, because we're so busy and we're so connected. And if you just ask them of who knows people, who knows things that we could do, who knows people that are out there that folks can be connected with. You know, we've got a video on Quillo about the why does he run, this young man that I was brought in to work with, and he had he would bolt from his waiver apartment, just go off running, and they couldn't figure out how to stop him. And the first question we said is, well, there could be three reasons he's running. He's running away because he hates it here. He's running to somewhere because he's really got to get somewhere, or he just needs to run. Now, this happened to be a guy that confused things a little bit for everybody because he also didn't speak. But they didn't think he was running away because he liked being around everybody at the home. And they didn't think there was somewhere he's running to. And so they decided to try the third one. And they went to a local track that had an enclosed fence around it, quarter mile track. Next thing you know, he ran 3.5 miles before he stopped.
Wow.
He loved running. And none of the staff were runners. And they said, gosh, I said, we need to find him somebody to run with. And they said, well, we're not runners. How do you find a runner? And I said, people generally run early in the morning or in the evenings. You need to be watching in the neighborhood and see if you can meet some runners in the neighborhood that you could introduce him to. Well, it took a while, about a month of just being watching for it. They finally met a couple of guys that were running in the neighborhood. And they said, sure, we'd love to have a running buddy. And next thing you know, he's running with them. And then they started inviting him over to his house on weekends for cookouts, but they ran 4 to 5 times a week. And he was a regular running partner. He never ran away again. And he also had a new community of runners. And they were going to start training for a longer race to get him involved with. That became part of his community. But it took some people sitting outside looking for runners, yeah, putting, you know, that effort in to find a connection there. And it's not always easy, but it can pay huge rewards for it.
And I'm sure that, you know, it helped him feel less alone as well and gave him a purpose, because now he has a team that will help him run a marathon. And, you know, when they meet that marathon, the next challenging one, and so on and so forth.
And having friends, you know, we all depend on friends. That our work is one thing, the things that we do, but those friendships and feelings we have for being valued and a part of something, you know, it's like the podcast we did with Patty out in New Jersey. where she gave staff these micro grants of $300 in the summer to find two people that somebody doesn't know that they could get involved with around something they love. Could be running, it could be gardening, it could be pottery making, it could be anything. But finding and testing where are some relationships that you will need to help build that sense of community. And you won't find relationships sitting at home on the couch. So we got to find ways that make it comfortable for folks to not push them into things they don't want to do, but find the things they want to do. And then how do you do more of it? It could be as simple as playing cornhole or bocce ball or watching the movies and going to the movies instead of watching everything on TV. How do you find things that people want to do? And what is it they love doing? And we do more of it.
Yeah. And John, you know, connecting this to Quilla Connect, I think that our circles really provide folks with the tools of having a streamlined communication with groups. For example, if you have a running group, right? You can have a circle of all of your folks and keep track of, hey, I did my miles today, or, you know, I'm having this sort of knee pain. What do you all recommend I do? How do you think that, you know, these circles on Quilla Connect are facilitating community gatherings for folks?
Well, it's a nice way. You could create a running circle. You could create a pottery circle. You could create a supported decision-making circle that just shares your feelings and thoughts and allows your team to come together around you. And it's people you invite in that you want to talk about things with. And so when we created circles, we didn't want it to replace human interaction, but find a way to complement that and find a way to share those things, because distance can be a barrier. You know, if one of your running buddies moves to Albuquerque, you know, you can still stay in touch and compare what you're doing and how you're doing. Or if there's that person that you want to stay in touch with as family members that's three counties or three states away, the idea of the circle is it can be anything you feel you need to connect with people and in a private and protected way. And so we hope that it complements that building of community, because it gives you another way that's private and only who you invite in that circle gets to see what you record and share, and they can communicate back in the same way.
Thank you, John. Anything else you want to add about the importance of community, John? When you think about your community, if you could narrow it down to one, which one would you highlight?
Well, I think it's really important. I think to me, it's family and extended family that is around the country that is really important, that is key. The next are some critical friendships of folks that don't live close to me. So the idea, just had the thought I should create a circle for just some of my friends that are not on Quillo, and it might be a nice way for people to stay in touch and send that sort of messaging back and forth of what we do. It is all about what's important to you, what you want, what are those connections, and then how do you find them in a way that makes sense. During the pandemic, where we didn't get to travel as much, there was a group of seven of us that started an every other Wednesday happy hour, because we didn't, these are the people we'd usually come to a conference together and sit in the bar and have a drink. And so we created this happy hour movement, and we've kept it going now for 3 years. And somebody from New Jersey, somebody from New York, a couple people from DC, one from Arkansas, one from Maryland. I mean, it's this very diverse group, one from Pennsylvania, that we don't always agree, but it's, we appreciate each other so much that it's just a great way to connect along that way. So again, something that's valuable to us is important to share is really important. So I would encourage people to say, who's somebody you wish you'd talked to in the last month that you haven't, or the last 6 months, and reach out to them. Who's somebody you miss? Because those are the things that can get overlooked with the heavy pace and the fast pace of what we live. So reach out to that one person, tell them you miss them, and ask them, how are they doing? And when they say, let's keep in touch, let's keep doing it.
Thank you, John. To all of our listeners, thank you for tuning in, and we hope to see you all again next Thursday. We'll have another special podcast with a couple of guests. If you found this podcast helpful, a good reminder of community, please be sure to share it with those in your network, with friends, family, coworkers. Until next time.